Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is April 17th, 2016, and this is episode 107, Belated Blizzard Birthday Buoy. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be talking about the biggest name in PC gaming. So, well, this side of Valve in any event. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, do you want to get us rolling?
Yeah, last time we had talked about how Capcom was going to be making some more Sengoku Basara titles along with some other franchises that have been long neglected. In the latest issue of Famitsu, it's been announced that the upcoming title Sengoku Basara Legend of Sanada Yukimura will be coming to PS4 and PS3 this September. We'll feature a younger Sanada Yukimura-san, along with other younger versions of generals.
Excellent. That's really exciting news. You know, I was just sort of wondering out loud on GameBuoy Live, you know, where the next Sengoku Basara game was. So
Here it is.
We also have a bunch of new Pokemon Go information. You know, it is going to be playing very similar to the other Niantic Games game Ingress, except in this game there will actually be three teams, red, blue, and yellow. You'll be asked to join one of the teams, and then you'll be able to train at friendly gyms that are set up by people of the same team as you. The combat system is not turn-based. It is all a countdown timer real-time combat system.
Interesting.
Yes. And, you know, apparently there is a game like physics throwy type mechanic involved in catching wild Pokemon. It sounds like it's going to be a very different Pokemon experience from what a lot of us were expecting, which is, you know, for it to just sort of be like an AR version of the already existent Pokemon games.
That sounds exciting, though. The question is, what team are we going to be on?
We will have to discuss that in the future. We also have word here that Shin Megami Tensei IV The Final will be releasing in North America. This was announced just on Friday, in fact, that Shin Megami Tensei IV Apocalypse will be releasing in North America this summer.
Excellent. Garland has been added to Dissidia Final Fantasy, the arcade game. So he is the first villain in the game and is a heavy type character.
Excellent. That's very exciting. We also have some numbers coming in now via SurveyMonkey Intelligence as to how Miitomo is performing. They are getting about 4 million monthly active users, and the revenue breakdown comes to about $280,000 a week. So, you know, while Miitomo may not be the top of the pack, it's certainly not, you know, Clash of Clans or what have you, there is nothing to sneeze at about this. It's making millions a month, and, you know, as long as people stay interested in Miitomo, it looks like this is going to be a real hit for Nintendo right out the gate.
That's great. Gung Ho Online Entertainment has said that it will be showing off, among other things, Let It Die at PAX East. And this was the game originally known as Lily Bergamo. So it kind of had been a little bit missing from, you know, the news in terms of whenever Grasshopper Manufacturer came up. So please look forward to more information about that. They'll also be talking about Puzzle & Dragons, Super Senso, Galaxy, Variant Mobile.
Yeah, I care about literally zero of those. What I'm really stoked about is the fact that Let It Die is making its big, you know, reappearance. There was a new trailer cut just for this PAX 2016 presentation. It looks like the game is back on track toward being a real thing. So I'm definitely very, very excited about this.
Yeah, and after PAX East, which is this week, right? Or this weekend?
This upcoming weekend,
we'll be able to give you more information about that.
Fantastic. Pokemon Co-Master has released in Japan. As many of us expected, this is a mobile version of the Pokemon trading figure game. And it has gacha-style, you know, rarities for the various figures. So when you buy a pack, you have, you know, like a 0.5% chance to get a Charizard, Venusaur, Dialga, Palkia, etc. So far, this game is only available in Japan for Android, in fact. The iOS version is expected to launch soon, and we are all hoping for a worldwide release in the future.
Yes. Speaking of Pokemon, if you subscribe to the Pokemon Trainer Club newsletter in North America, you will have a chance, or you will be guaranteed, a legendary bird distribution event for XY, Alpha, Sapphire, and Omega Ruby. That means that if you subscribe before April 22nd, then you will get codes for Articuno, Moltres, and Zapdos. That should have been in a different order, but I'm reading it from the article. Moltres comes last in the Pokédex in that order, and we all know that.
Maybe they didn't understand the Spanish language pun being made by the three birds' names. It's okay. It's okay. Either way,
you'll be able to get your beloved Articuno, which I'm talking directly to you.
Either way, you have until April 22nd to sign up for this newsletter if you don't already, so I would highly recommend you all get on it if you like Pokémon.
And who doesn't? Well, I guess there's a few people.
Right. We also have word here from Kenichiro Takaki-san, whom you might be familiar with as the producer of the Senran Kagura games, the upcoming Valkyrie Drive, and Uppers, which we've talked about a lot here on the show in the last few episodes. He basically was tweeting that he does hope to localize these games for release outside of Japan.
That's good news.
Fingers crossed, maybe at some point we'll get to play Uppers. I hope enough people have pre-ordered it.
That's great. Dragon Ball Z Extreme Butoden has added three new modes with a patch. So when it launched back in October, it was missing a couple of modes. So there's an online mode, an extreme survival mode, and a training mode. So now the game is more fully featured.
Yeah, something else really cool about this, you know, the game was also completely rebalanced with a lot of character moves tweaked, and new assist characters have been added, including a couple of, like, fun Dragon Ball Super Easter eggs. So,
ooh.
Yeah, it's definitely cute what they did. I actually liked Extreme Butoden a fair bit, so I'm really excited about this.
That's great.
We also have word that Monaco and Doom 3 BFG Edition are now backwards compatible on the Xbox One. I point this out, of course, because Monaco is probably one of the most fun same-screen multiplayer games you can have. So if you have a Xbox One connected to a large TV, you have multiple controllers, have some friends over for Monaco. It's a really great time.
Good for you, Microsoft.
And you want to take this last one?
Yeah, we have some information about World of Warcraft Legion, the upcoming expansion to World of Warcraft, and that is in the form of a new revamped challenge mode. Basically, it's going to be inspired by the Greater Rifts in Diablo 3, where you can basically interact with a pedestal in the dungeon, and it will enable a challenge mode, which can be things like making the tank generate less threat, or the there will be a constantly ticking damage over time that you have to keep healed up. So
you get these modifiers into play, and you have to, you know, run through the dungeon successfully even with them. And there are added rewards and what have you for doing so. So it's pretty exciting stuff, I feel. Should definitely help pick up the slack for how dull five-mans can get in WoW over time. I remember playing a lot of WoW a couple of years back and getting to the point where the instances were so boring that even though I had to run them for coins or points or whatever the hell, I had no interest because I was so bored of them all.
Yeah, dungeons by the end game just got useless.
So this is the exact kind of thing to sort of keep the pressure up a little bit and keep it interesting. And of course, you will be additionally rewarded for taking these challenges on. So I'm quite looking forward to it, and hopefully, Blizzard still hasn't set an actual release date for Legion, just that they'll be releasing on or before September 21st. So let's hope it's a lot sooner than September 21st.
It'll be September 21st.
Probably. We have a slate of release dates here. The first one has already happened. This is for Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key, which launched in English in North America on April 7th for iOS and Android devices.
Ray Gigant is coming to North America and Europe on May 3rd.
We have word that Severed, Drinkbox Studios' next game, will be coming to North American and European PlayStation Vitas on April 26th.
And the new Attack on Titan game will be coming to the United States on August 30th, and a few days earlier on August 26th for Europe. This is for PS3, PS4, Vita, Xbox One, and Windows PC.
Excellent. Although in North America, only the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One versions will be getting physical releases.
Yeah.
We also have word here that the upcoming Resident Evil spinoff Umbrella Corps is releasing now on June 21st. Initially, the game, which will be launching at a $29.99 price point, was set for a May launch window, but Capcom has confirmed it will in fact be releasing on June 21st due to some extra optimization work that they decided to do during development. That sounds super good to me, and I can't wait to see how this game turns out.
Yo-Kai Watch 3 finally has the release date for Japan. On July 16th, you'll be able to pick up either the sushi or tempura version of Yo-Kai Watch 3. Adorable.
Excellent. We also have word that Godly Prison Tower Mary Skelter will be releasing on PlayStation Vita in Japan on October 13th. And last but certainly not least, Tales of Berseria will be releasing in Japan on August 18th. This is all games that we're super excited to see, and we can't wait to talk to you more about them. Until then, though, Slaggy, are you ready for some news?
Oh my god.
News. 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 Oh my god. News.
First up, we have word here that Dynasty Warriors Eketsuden has been announced for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation Vita in Famitsu earlier this month. The game will be releasing in Japan in 2016, and, it looks like an expansion of the typical game concepts that we expect from the Dynasty Warriors series. And this one in particular actually has sort of a strategy RPG bent to it, so that's definitely very exciting.
Konami has revealed Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Monsters Ultimate Card Battle for the 3DS. This was in an issue of Jump Magazine. It's going to have a brand new protagonist facing rivals in card battles.
Awesome. We also have word here of a new Dragon Ball game for 3DS. This is Dragon Ball Fusions. It's a game based around the Dragon Ball Fusion technique, and this game will offer you the unique ability to fuse any two Dragon Ball Z characters that you would like to
Finally, fuse. I can fuse Piccolo and Gohan.
Oh man, is that your OTP?
Dream Team.
The game is designed by Ganbarion, whom you're probably familiar with from the J-Stars Victory Versus, Jump Superstars, Jump Ultimate Stars. These guys know this license inside and out, and this is probably going to be a fantastic game. It's definitely one I'm looking forward to, and assuming it doesn't get announced for North American release, I will be importing it, and we'll tell you all about it.
Square Enix has released a new trailer, or actually the first trailer, for Valkyrie Anatomia, The Origin, which is an RPG taking place before the first Valkyrie Profile. This is a smartphone title.
Excellent. You know, I know a lot of people are super mad about it being a smartphone game, but unfortunately, you know, the Valkyrie Profile series was given chances across multiple platforms, failed to set, you know, sales charts on fire. So this seems to me like a lower risk way to give Valkyrie a second chance. So fingers crossed that the game turns out well. I'm really looking forward to it, and fingers crossed.
We also similarly have a teaser from Square Enix for Project Rising, an upcoming smartphone title, which will get its official reveal on April 19th.
Hey, so as this episode of Game Buoy airs on the VOG Network, you might already be hearing about Project Rising. Have fun in the future. We also have word here that the Sailor Moon iOS and Android game Sailor Moon Drops is now available in North America.
Yes!
This is a Sailor Moon-themed match 3 game, and I know quite a few people on Twitter who are super into it. So.
Yeah, I mean, say no more. Sailor Moon in match 3 already wins my heart.
We also have something of a megaton announcement for a very specific type of nerd out there. Romancing Saga 2 will be releasing in North America on Android and iPhone. This is the 16-bit style remake of the original Romancing Saga 2. Obviously, you know, this was released in Japan for smartphone and PlayStation Vita. Square Enix has been sort of voting no confidence in Vita, but it is huge news that we're going to be getting this in North America. This is the first time Romancing Saga 2 will ever be officially released here. Unless they do something awful with the port, I highly, highly, highly encourage you to check this game out. It's a classic.
That's great. Idea Factory International has announced that they will be localizing Super Dimension Neptune versus Sega Hard Girls in English. It is going to be coming in fall 2016 for the Vita.
Excellent, excellent. I can't wait to play that. I really enjoyed that Sega Hard Girls animation.
Oh, right.
And last but certainly not least in our news this week, we have word that Neo Geo enthusiast Neo Turfmaster bought a collection of old Neo Geo test boards. One of them, when he began tinkering around with it, he found had game data from an unreleased Neo Geo fighting game. The game is not complete, but it's, actually, like, you can tell it has something of an engine in place. It has character sprites for, like, 12 characters or something, 10 characters, I'm sorry. And it's it looks pretty interesting. We don't really know who was developing it at this point. It could have been SNK themselves. It could have been Taito. It could have been Visco. It could have even been Sunsoft.
Oh, Sunsoft.
Yeah, yeah. We just have no idea. In fact, some people are saying it might have been done by Technos, as the cartridges that the data were found on were actually old Voltage Fighter Gaukaiser carts. But we don't really know anything about it. It doesn't have credits. It's just a game that is in a very early but playable form on an unknown cart. So
I mean, for its time, the art like that I saw looked really good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, those Neo Geo games had fantastic art. And this is just something that, to me, as a Neo Geo enthusiast, I'm super into. I know in the modern day, you know, Neo Geo is super, super, super well loved, and I just think it's really neat that, you know, there's a potential new game floating around out there.
Indeed.
Awesome. All right. Well, unless you have anything else, unfortunately, this week we do have a little bit of Saigi, do you want to get us started with this first piece of Doom and or Gloom?
Yeah, so you might remember back in January 2013 that Gust announced their social RPG, Chronos Materia, for the Vita. It is unfortunately canceled.
You know, this is very unfortunate to me. Back when this game was announced, I remember being really excited for it because it was actually being modeled around a very similar concept to Radiant Historia, which is a game that I think is absolutely fantastic. It's sort of like a less linear Chrono Trigger. So I was really excited for this Chronos Materia. I think it sucks that it's, you know, no longer going to happen. But at the same time, I hope that Gust can take some of these ideas and bring them to other games moving forward. And, you know, fingers crossed it's not a complete loss.
Yeah.
We also have word that the Japanese Kingdom Hearts Key browser game will be shutting down in Japan this September. This is the game that tells basically the same events from Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key, but is, you know, the mobile browser, or not mobile, but the computer browser version.
Yeah.
A lot of people are theorizing this is because Unchained Key has been a success now actually worldwide, and so it just didn't make sense for them to support, you know, the same game twice over basically with completely different backends. So it certainly tracks, but it's still sad. I hate any time a game is canceled and lost to forever when it's one of these online games. So
yep,
you know, it definitely sucks to lose content. So either way, pouring out a 40 for Kingdom Hearts Key, and you know, hopefully there aren't any story elements that were exclusive to that game.
Let's hope not. Square Enix announced that Nosgoth, which is the multiplayer Legacy of Kain game, is being shut down, and that's going to be official as of May 31st.
So, I'm of mixed feelings about this. I'm a huge Legacy of Kain fanboy. That game has influenced my life in ways that you would literally not believe even if I told you. So, you know, to hear this, it's a little bit of a punch in the gut because I hate Legacy of Kain games being canceled or not treated right. At the same time, this was a really strange license to build a multiplayer arena shooter around.
Yeah.
That having been said, you know, I have Nosgoth. I got it in one of the Humble Bundles or something. I feel like that's probably true for a lot of you out there with big Steam backlogs. Backlogs like mine. I would recommend you try the game. It's actually really fun. It's just really weird that, you know, they sort of put it into the Legacy of Kain mold rather than letting it be its own thing. Either way, this was being developed by Psyonix, the folks behind Rocket League. So, you know, hopefully when the game turns off on May 31st, their studio isn't impacted too badly.
Yeah, let's hope not.
That having been said, you know, while not doomy or gloomy necessarily, we do have some very controversial news. So let's move forward to that.
Gasp.
Controversial.
Oh my god.
So the first, and you may have heard about this if you follow PC gaming news, is that one of the
follow PC Genjin news. Sorry.
One of the most popular private servers for World of Warcraft was shut down on April 10th. This was Nostalrius, and it was very specifically a game that used the vanilla version of World of Warcraft as its base. Now, this was not unlike a lot of other private servers. You know, they weren't necessarily trying to get around people who want to play but not pay sub fees. They weren't trying to, like, do crazy stuff to completely break the game. They were just trying to present an authentic version of what WoW was like back in the vanilla days. Now, Blizzard had them shut down for basically, you know, breaking terms of use and, you know, the agreements rights that we all agree to when we load these online games. And that's something that I have mixed feelings about. Like, on one hand, I appreciate that, you know, it does go against terms of use to be running a server like this, unfortunately. Even if it's using reverse engineered code, even if it's not running actual stolen assets necessarily per se, you know, still against terms of use. And I guess, you know, they do have a valid legal position to shut something like this down. But my problem is, you know, this server in particular had 800,000 registered accounts, over 10,000 players online at any given time. This was a big deal. And if Blizzard's concern is the actual money of it, maybe this is proof, like actual proof that a vanilla server is something that the community wants.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
You know, anytime the topic of vanilla servers come up, Blizzard talks about, oh, people think they want that, but they don't really.
Clearly they do.
Which is, first off, offensive. Like, you would tell me, what I want to play. Really? And, you know, I've talked about this before when talking about Blizzard. I like Blizzard a lot. Obviously, this is a Blizzard episode, but they can be a little bit headstrong about this kind of thing. And they're acting like, oh, people only want vanilla servers because of nostalgia goggles. They don't really remember what it was like. The game is so much better now, and it wouldn't even be worth doing. People would only play it for a week and then never touch it again. But, like, we have actual data now that that's not the case. People get really into these games. Like, I'm sorry, but it is so stupid to me that, like, oh, hey, 800,000 registered accounts, and y'all won't even, like, I don't know, put out a poll or, like, survey of your user base to see, like, is this a service that you would subscribe to? Would you pay an extra dollar a month on top of your already existent WoW account to do this?
If they had Wrath servers, I would in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely. Who wouldn't? I mean, literally everyone I know would play that. And maybe that's their worry, you know? Maybe the worry is that we would rather play an older version of the game than what the game is now. Maybe they don't like what that represents. But ultimately, it sure feels right now like you're leaving money on the table and denying us a service that we want. So I don't know. Figure it out, Blizzard.
Indeed. So this next piece of controversial news is, I don't want to say it's silly, but I mean, I am just rolling my eyes at the people who are complaining about this, because if you're familiar with the game Rust, it has like random elements based on your Steam ID. So we've talked about this in the past with, you know, your skin color and also your endowment.
Penis size,
yes. So, you know, they finally introduced female player models to the game, and it has been done randomly, and people are unhappy that they are being forced to play as a female character in Rust.
And, you know, much like with, you know, race / skin tone, penis size, or endowment, as Slagkick prefers to say, your gender does not change your in-game capabilities. It is purely cosmetic, which, you know, it feels like the game's developers are just trying to make a point. But a lot of people are very, very, very unhappy that their characters are being changed without their consent as they feel it. And even more that, you know, male players are being, you know, stuck with female characters.
Ooh.
Right? But again, the game is not any different from a gameplay perspective at all. The community, in fact, has even already come up with mods so that you can see your character as the gender that you choose, even if online other people will still see them, which does itself almost present an interesting case of almost like passing as another gender from what the rest of the world sees you as, while you see yourself as something else. So the layers of meta here are, to me, honestly, quite interesting as far as what it says and what lengths people will go to. There's actual insight to be had here for some people, I think. Yeah. Whether or not they'll choose to grab that, I don't know, but definitely a very interesting scenario that I think is personally very cool and interesting.
Indeed. I mean, I've never really had much of an interest in jumping into Rust, but I kind of want to now, and just to see what character I end up with.
Well, do you have anything else?
We have a pretty controversial article was published over on VentureBeat by a veteran of the game industry, Alex St. John. This is a gentleman who helped co-create DirectX with Microsoft and was the founder of the game company WildTangent, who you may be familiar with from all those spyware games back in the early 2000s. All that bloatware. So basically, this article by Mr. St. John is complaining about people who are in the industry and sort of saying, you know, that, like, oh, they're wage slaves or whatever, or that, you know, it's the 80-hour-a-week grind, crunch time, you know, some of the things that the IGDA, am I saying them right?
I believe so.
Are actually trying to go to bat for, like, you know, for game industry members. And so he's like, stop acting like your work is strenuous. You're clicking a mouse and writing code. You know, and so if that's not your passion and that's not your true calling, then you shouldn't be whining about being in this industry and taking up the space of someone who really want to be doing this job.
Wow. And you know, I this actually is doubling as both a controversial piece and one of our recommended reading smashes. And this is because Kotaku also did a write-up on this piece and, you know, basically calls them to task for how toxic this standpoint is. You know, this
reminds
is
me
not
of
a good
the,
thing.
The animation industry, which operates on a very similar kind of mindset. Like, oh, if you aren't willing to have sleepless nights to work to perfection on this animated film or series or whatever, then have fun.
Yeah, pretty much. It definitely has its similarities. It's very gross, you know, unfortunately. I hate to call people out, but I think Mr. St. John is completely wrong. I do think it's interesting to get that perspective. It certainly makes me understand how these sort of crunch schedules are, you know, still flourishing even in 2016 now. But I definitely disagree with him. And I thought that this Kotaku piece calling him out was honestly a really good piece that was worth reading. So that's, you know, recommended reading this week.
I have to say, and I'm probably being really shady here, but he quotes or a quote of his included in this article is, making games is not a job, it's an art. I'm like, dude, you worked for Wild Tangent. I don't think I would consider any of those games art.
Well, and even still, you know, it's really, I appreciate that perspective from a certain degree, but at the same time, throughout history, artists have always sought to, you know, live on their art, to profit on their art, so that they can continue making more art. So, you know, the act of creation, even, you know, it's like this guy's seeking a philosophical purity in his act of creation that I don't think really works in the development of commercial games, period.
This just came up to me.
Really gross.
As another of the series of bootstrappy, anti-millennial, you know, millennials are lazy, complaining about having to do hard work. I'm like, no, stop it. Stop it.
Stop.
This baby boomer bullshit.
BBBS. All right, well, we also have a really fantastic piece here. I'd recommend you check out this video. This was actually done by Liam Robertson over at Unseen64. I'm linking it to you via Gamma Sutra, but it's basically a 12-minute long video, sort of pulling together all of the various research that he did, including some video of a couple of these projects, about the canceled MMO DJ Hero / Guitar Hero. You know, this MMO game that was supposed to, like, connect Guitar Hero 7, DJ Hero 3, and future Band Hero games, which obviously never came to fruition. It was going to be a PC browser and mobile phone MMO, a persistent world, would change, like, your in-game venues in the various hero games and everything. It actually sounded really interesting and really ambitious, honestly. I saw a couple of sites report on this, and I didn't link to any of them because most of them were like, LOL, thank God we dodged that bullet. But I don't know, I thought it sounded really cool. I was kind of rapt for, like, this entire 12-minute video. And we want to link it to you over at GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
You know, where we post all of our episode guides to every episode, you know, the week after it airs.
Yep, the play-at-home version.
Right? You want to take this last one?
Yeah, this one is called The Mess That Came After Nintendo Fired an Employee. It's by Patrick Klepek over at Kotaku. You know, Kotaku really just doing a lot of this kind of writing that a lot of the other sites are trying to shy away from because it can be so controversial. Like, in a way, this one is controversial too because it is a follow-up to, you know, just the coverage of Allison Rapp's termination from Nintendo and just basically how reporting on situations like this, you know, just kind of the how you can get into hot water, you know, like at first a lot of the details weren't known, but then even when Nintendo did reveal, like, like, did that, like, you know, make it any better? And then also just talking about how, you know, the publicity it's gotten has actually made things worse for Miss Strap. Her family is now being targeted and doxxed and all that sort of thing. And even Mr. Klepek himself has been targeted with harassment just for reporting about this. So,
which is obviously awful. Like, that is
completely disgusting.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm trying really hard not to say like insane or crazy, but it is those things.
I mean, just that we are living in a world where having an opinion about a video game can put your life at risk.
Yeah, it can permanently ruin your life to have like too strong of feelings about video game stuff. That is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole gaming is dead rhetoric thing, like gamers don't exist anymore as a community or whatever, like you have to like really consider why some people are you know, choosing to use that rhetoric, because I mean, it's disgusting. I mean, online harassment is not just limited to gaming, but I mean, we're seeing some of the most toxic, most hateful things being done in this so-called community, and I mean, I don't think that we should stand for it.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing I really did like about this Kotaku piece is that when discussing the issues, I really felt that they presented things in a very even-handed way, acknowledging, you know, that certainly all signs point to Miss Rapp's position being forfeit due to her second job and what have you. But at the same time, pointing out that, you know, that can happen and we can still be mad about this. Like, we can still be upset about Nintendo's policies. She can still be upset about them, while also acknowledging that, you know, she did break rules, and, you know, maybe they were rules that didn't exist, that shouldn't have existed in the first place. But, you know, you can have a whole you can and should be able to have a whole conversation about this without having to fear people coming for you and your family in real life. So I just thought it was a really even-handed piece. I thought it was really fantastic writing, and for me at least, big ups to Kotaku for this piece.
Exactly. Even if it is going to get him under further fire, I mean, you know, just speaking up about these things, I think, you know, he deserves, and anyone else who's reported about these sorts of issues, they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Man, thank God we have no listeners.
Pretty much.
All right, well, let's move forward here. We have a discussion to be had. We're going to talk about Blizzard today. You know, they recently...
I could use a Blizzard. It is hot in the SS Game Buoy.
Yeah, it is. It is warm. So, Blizzard was originally founded in February of 1991. They were called Silicon and Synapse in those days, and you were probably most familiar with them for the work of, like, game ports and even some development of some 16-bit titles. So, you know, that's obviously a far way to have come in the last 25 years for, you know, who is now easily the second biggest name in PC gaming. And I say second, obviously the first is Valve. Calm down, all y'all out there who are still waiting on Half-Life 3, as if that's ever going to happen. But obviously, you know, Blizzard, they're behind, you know, some of the biggest games in PC gaming ever. Warcraft, Diablo, StarCraft. Now they have Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch. It's really interesting, too, because if you really look at it, you know, they only have a handful of IP that are active in the modern age.
Yeah, but they got these hit franchises that just went huge global popularity and, you know.
Yeah, just these absolutely massive games.
That really resonate with a lot of people.
Indeed. Slaggy, do you want to go over their history a little bit?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, it is the 25th anniversary of the founding of, really, Silicon and Synapse. This was on February 8th, 1991 by Michael Morhaime, Alan Adham, and Frank Pierce. They were all recipients of bachelor's degrees from UCLA, so about a year after college, they formed this studio, and, you know, they were all, you know, big fantasy sci-fi nerds, and some of their earliest titles included J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings Volume 1, which was...
That was actually a Super Nintendo port of a PC game, right?
I believe so, yes, because the original one was a MS-DOS Amiga PC 98 and FM Towns Marty game.
Yeah. So, let's see. They did some ports of the second Battle Chess game, so that was certainly very interesting. But the story gets a little more interesting in 1991 when they developed their first, like, standalone original game, RPM Racing, for the Super Nintendo. Nintendo. RPM Racing is one of those games that was, in its day, really well-loved, even though probably nowadays you look at it and it's like, what is going on here? It was really interesting because, you know, they came from a sort of a PC background, doing PC ports and what have you. But so they actually developed a high-resolution graphics mode for the SNES. There were some features in the hardware built in that were typically not active that they sort of learned how to work with, which actually allowed the game to run, you know, larger sprites with like sharper detail, but it would display significantly fewer on-screen colors. As a result, RPM Racing and its sequel, Rock and Roll Racing, does not do this. So RPM is sort of unique in that it looks very different from other Super Nintendo games. When you play it, like, you can just look at it and tell, like, no, this game displays funny. This is weird.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's always something super cool and interesting to me. Obviously, in 1992, they released The Lost Vikings. This is a really well-loved side-scrolling puzzle game. You take over, you control three Vikings trying to get off of, like, an alien spaceship that has abducted you.
Yeah, so it's really fun.
Yeah, it's a really fun game. It was originally released for the Amiga CD32 console, or not console, PC. Also had an Amiga, like a regular Amiga version.
Man, Amiga was a big deal back in the day.
Oh yeah, it was. There was a Super Nintendo version. There was a Genesis version. They did a release on the PlayStation 1. It got a Game Boy Advance port. So, and in fact, I believe you can download it free from Battle.net if you have a legacy Battle.net account.
I know that was true a couple years ago, so I mean, I assume that is still the case.
I was just looking at my Battle.net games literally on Thursday night because I resubbed to World of Warcraft in advance of this episode. What? It was the appropriate thing to do my research.
It probably was, yes.
So, I still saw Lost Vikings listed there. So, you know, it's very cool. And this to me was actually, for me, where Blizzard got on my radar. Obviously not as Blizzard, but I played this game and it was unlike anything else I had really played. And it definitely had me very interested in other games like it. Unfortunately, that wasn't quite to come to pass. But in 1993, Rock and Roll Racing released. And Rock and Roll Racing was really interesting because it actually had like MIDI versions of like real songs. It had like Paranoid by Black Sabbath, the Peter Gunn theme, a Highway Star by Deep Purple, Radar Love by Gold Earring, Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf, Bad to the Bone by George Thorogood. So it was really interesting because this was obviously like super unheard of to have like real recognizable music in your video games.
Yeah, this was due to Interplay, the publisher, I believe.
Excellent. And you know, I played it on Super NES, and I played it on Genesis through the glory of the Sega Channel. But
oh,
it was
awesome.
You know, it was a really cool game. Used an isometric perspective, very similar to like a RC Pro-Am type situation. Did not look as good as its prequel game, RPM Racing, due to not using the like high definition mode or whatever, high resolution mode, I'm sorry. But it's still, you know, it's a really cool game, good play it control, something that probably not super worth going out of your way to find in the modern age, but it's still, I had a lot of fun with it in its time. As well as that, Blizzard also released another game on the Super Nintendo platform in 1994, and this one was actually their first game as Blizzard, as far as I know. This was called Blackthorn, released in European territories as Black Hawk, and it's actually like this really wild game. It's like sci-fi. It has some like North American Indian, I'm sorry, Native American like themes involved in the storytelling, and with regard to like mysticism and stuff, which I'm super into. That's my cultural heritage, and I thought it was really cool to see some elements
that being almost the roots of like the Orcs of Warcraft, if you think of it, like kind of that blend of like being from outer space but also having a very, you know, worldly sort of mysticism.
Oh yeah. And you know, I know some people call like the orcs and stuff like super appropriative. I'm trying to get away from that accusation, but I never felt that way, and that is something that I personally would have like do have, you know, some awareness of. So definitely, you know, interesting stuff. Either way, the game Blackthorn, it plays very similar to the old games that were very popular in that time, Out of This World and Another World. So definitely some really cool stuff going on. on as far as like interactivity with the environment. It was it's an action game ostensibly, but it's sort of positioned in such a way that every encounter is almost like a little puzzle you have to figure out. I think it's an absolutely fantastic game. I love it. I think it's absolutely worth playing, and it's another one that's available on Battle.net for legacy accounts as a free download. And for those of you like me who are comic book nerds, you might get turned on to this game the way I got turned on to it, because it had cover art done by Jim Lee, who is like the main artist of Marvel's X-Men at the time. So yeah, definitely very interesting stuff. And you know, somewhat interesting to that. And we're about to get into like the sort of big stuff, the big IP, but we have one more game to talk about.
Speaking of comics.
One more game to talk about before we get there. And this was the side-scrolling beat-em-up for the Super Nintendo and Genesis, The Death and Return of Superman. This was developed by Blizzard, published by Sunsoft. It's, frankly, kind of a hot mess.
Sunsoft coming up twice.
That is the most Sunsoft has come up anywhere in like 20 years.
Wow.
Right? 2016, and we've brought up Sunsoft twice. Who would believe it? It was, it's a mess of a game. It's not super good. I liked it because I was reading comics in that age. I grew up reading Superman, so I was super into this. And when I found out that it was by the Blackthorn guys, I was like, oh, heck yeah, I have to play that. Unfortunately, I was a bit let down, but it's still one of those really interesting curios that if you could find a copy of the game or play it, however, it's worth checking out. It's worth checking out just for sort of the wow factor of it. No pun intended.
I don't know if you were strictly trying to go in direct chronological order here, but I feel like before it really just gets into Warcraft, Starcraft, Diablo territory, even though this was not the next game they released, they also did Justice League Task Force, which actually they co-developed with Sunsoft for the SNES. And interestingly, the Genesis version was co-developed with Condor, which would later become Blizzard North.
Interesting. And I feel like the Super Nintendo and Genesis versions were pretty different games. You know, I haven't played either
just
of them.
It's funny that they both ended up being,
Blizzard. Right. And, you know, just to sort of clean up then. And in 1997, The Lost Vikings 2 came out for the Super Nintendo. I believe we have now talked about literally all of Blizzard's published work that isn't the big IP.
Mm-hmm.
Which tells you everything you need to know about Blizzard in a lot of ways.
One little notable piece of Justice League Task Force, it was the first work that Chris Metzen did with the company.
Oh, interesting. Why don't you tell people who Chris Metzen is?
So Chris Metzen is probably the face of Blizzard at this point. He is an artist, voice actor. He does like pretty much all of the lore and story for, you know, definitely the Warcraft games. But, he's kind of like just the big creative mind at Blizzard, and he came on early, like right as they were kind of developing Warcraft Orcs and Humans, which we'll be talking about in a minute. And yeah, he's just kind of really grown to become the face of Blizzard.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's go back to our history. Where did we leave the history talk?
Well, aside from the little sidebars about Justice League Task Force, which I just cannot say today, and The Lost Vikings 2, I believe we were about to talk about a groundbreaking RTS game.
All right. Well, then why don't you get us started on that?
So this, of course, is Warcraft Orcs and Humans, which was originally released in 1994, November 23rd, in North America for MS-DOS, and later got a Macintosh release as well.
Much later, like 1996.
Yeah, and it's basically, it's an RTS game, but it involves the orcs from Draenor coming to invade the world of Azeroth, which it has human inhabitants, and, you know, really just introduce the world that would grow to become the world of Warcraft, like literally.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, something interesting is that a lot of people talk about Warcraft and early Warcraft as, you know, really the beginning of Blizzard's domination. I wouldn't agree with that, actually. I would say that Warcraft 2 is where Warcraft really took off.
Yeah, I mean, Warcraft 1, I never spent a lot of time with it. I mean, it was obviously much, much later. But, I mean, for its time, you know, nice sprite work and, you know, it's a fun little time. But, I mean, it is very, by comparison, basic.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, you know, I liked real-time strategy games. And, you know, I actually really, really loved Dune 2 by Westwood Studios. Obviously, you're probably familiar with Westwood from their work on the Command & Conquer games.
I'm familiar with Vivian Westwood, thank you.
But Blizzard actually had made Warcraft specifically to sort of exploit on the fact that Westwood hadn't done a sequel to Dune. And, you know, they were very, very much like, you know, we need to get a game out there right now to take advantage of the fact that Westwood doesn't have anything else out right now. Little did they know that Command & Conquer would be coming just in, you know, 1995, but they got Warcraft out and they exploited a market that was hungry for that kind of content. And we ended up seeing the much expanded sequel to the game release on DOS in 1995 as well. And this is Warcraft 2, The Tides of Darkness.
You know, just something really quick that I want to point out about the original Warcraft is that this was something that I learned a lot later on, but which was just really, I think, kind of neat, is because, you know, a lot of people responded to, you know, this setting of Azeroth. You know, obviously, a lot of people, you know, just really love the lore behind the World of Warcraft, which can be both the MMO or just, you know, the lowercase world of Warcraft. But a lot of the script was just improvised for the original Warcraft, so...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's actually quite fascinating. But, Slag, why don't you talk a little bit about Warcraft 2, Tides of Darkness?
So, Warcraft 2, like, just built on what was established in the original Warcraft games, and allowed you to play either as the human or the orc campaigns in standalone scenarios. And just kind of it introduced some things like, and in addition to just collecting resources, build buildings, destroying units, you also had some other things like you might have to rescue or do an escort mission. And I believe this was the first one with the map editor, if I'm correct.
That is certainly my understanding. I don't know whether there is or is not map editors for Warcraft Orcs and Humans. The version of the game that I had certainly didn't include them, but Warcraft 2, Tides of Darkness, definitely the release that I had it, because me and Seawolf Jason, who appeared here on the show in our first year as a guest to talk about fighting games back then, he and I used to play this game quite often, and we would both make maps for each other in the map editor, and, you know, like, oh, who can make the hardest level that the other person can't beat while still being fair. So yeah, there was a lot of fun to be had there, and for us it was like a real look at, like, oh, so this is what it's like to make levels and things.
And something that's funny is that they initially tried to have more modern elements, like fighter pilots. And I would argue that in, you know, the World of Warcraft, there's like the little helicopter you can build. So I'd argue that they did kind of bring in, but more in, you know, like a steampunk sort of way. But
yeah, and even back then, you know, they had stuff like gnomish inventors and their little gyrocrafts and zeppelins and what have you.
Uh-huh.
So from a gameplay perspective, those elements were definitely there.
Oh, indeed. And so, you know, the story was more fleshed out. It continued the battle between the orcs and the humans. And, you know, basically just ended up really setting the stage for what would happen beyond the Dark Portal, which was the expansion pack.
Excellent.
And this was actually developed by Cyberlore Studios. And they did some expansion packs for other things like MechWarrior 4, Heroes of Might and Magic 2. So really probably not a lot of stuff that you might be familiar with. They did Playboy the Mansion, though, which was the
fun
PS2, I believe, game that involved you PS2 and Xbox and Windows, actually. Yes. So, but this is not Playboy the Mansion movie. So this continued the story of the orcs and humans. It added two new campaigns and some multiplayer maps, and it introduced the world of Draenor, which, you know, is the setting of the current expansion pack that is, you know, due to wrap up. Well, I guess it kind of officially has wrapped up with the patch, but and also the, you know, Outlands are the, you know, later Draenor. So, you know, a lot of the famous heroes like Illyria, Khadgar, Grom Hellstream, Deathwing. I guess you couldn't really call him a hero, though. But, you know, a lot of these characters that have become so huge in the lore of Warcraft really first made their appearance in the Warcraft 2 Beyond the Dark Portal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, well, we're going to go out of order here for just a second, because I'd like to talk about the release of Warcraft 3. 3. And the reason I want to do this is because I want to bring us to a point where we can then talk about the current IP pillars of Blizzard. And I don't really think that the classic 3 Warcraft games are really a part of those IP pillars in anything other than technicality at the moment. So Warcraft 3 is a real-time strategy game released by Blizzard in 2002. So obviously, you know, quite a few years passed there. We went from, you know, cute 2D sprite-based games to like 3D games. And this is actually a big game changer for real-time strategy in general. You can't really overstate how big of a shift Warcraft 3 was in terms of development. And it's interesting because a lot of the current esports that you see being played really spin of Warcraft 3 Reign of Chaos. As Slagkick is eager to point out, the original mod for Defense of the Ancients, obviously you probably know it in the modern age as Dota, actually got its start in Warcraft 3. Warcraft 3 was different from the previous two Warcraft games in that you would have hero units that could actually level up as you played the game. So while you're on your map, you would have a hero unit, and as it killed things or completed map objectives, it would actually gain experience points and level, which you did not see happening to your units in the earlier games. So it was a big change to have, you know, your real-time strategy game basically based on this concept of, you know, there is a larger war going on, but you're also micromanaging these hero units to feed them and get them buffed to, you know, their maximum level 10, while trying to at least hold the tides of war at bay while this hero unit is leveling. That way then, once the hero unit is leveled enough, he can just come in and sweep up and win the map for you. Completely changed the way that these games are played. You obviously still see this going on in stuff like Dota. You can very specifically see how Dota is based around this idea. Obviously Heroes of the Storm is based on this idea.
League of Legends.
The Dota series based on this mod, but owned by Valve. They obviously have Dota 2 over on Valve. It's a pretty big game. That obviously gets its start here. All of the MOBAs, Paragon, Smite, League of Legends, which Slagkick just mentioned, they all have their roots in Warcraft 3, which, again, it can't be overstated. Absolute gigantic sea change. I don't really care about lore here, but you do, Saggy. Is there anything you wanted to say about the storyline of Warcraft 3?
Well, yeah, 3? I mean, if you're someone who's really more familiar with World of Warcraft, I think you still would get a lot of enjoyment out of Warcraft 3. It's just fantastic. Even if you're typically not a fan of RTS, I mean, definitely that was my experience. It really, you know, kind of changed my opinion. But you have characters like Thrall, Arthas, Jaina Proudmoore, who are, you know, to this day, well, I mean, I guess maybe not so much Arthas, but, you know, really just huge, huge, huge players in the World of Warcraft lore. And, you know, so it's just really cool, especially if you are going back from playing WoW first and you've never played Warcraft 3, just seeing these stories in the history playing out with the, you know, because when you go all the way, 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 way back to like the first war between the orcs and humans, you know, it's still referenced there. But I mean, this is really where you feel like, you know, you play an undead mission, I'm sorry, scenario, you play a night elf scenario. So, I mean, it really just feels familiar. But I could imagine that, you know, if you were playing World of Warcraft shortly, you know, which came out just a couple years after Warcraft 3, you probably had that same familiarity. So,
all right. Excellent. Excellent. Well, then let's start talking about these core pillars. And I say that because, you know, in the interest of time and in getting a little bit more of a complete picture of talking about these as games rather than just historical notes, I'd like to switch over to that. So The first one we're going to talk about is Diablo. The first Diablo game released on the PC on December 31st, 1996. Now,
ooh, it's got a birthday coming up.
Yeah, it does. Diablo was and remains a fantasy RPG dungeon crawler. The big focuses of Diablo, I would say, are probably the focus on loot as a means of progression. You also, of course, have your character levels. You're gaining experience all the way. Every level up, you get points to spend on your attributes and special skills. But your main means of progression actually come from the loot that drops. In fact, you know, it's funny, in those early Halcyon days, the first time I played World of Warcraft, which we're going to talk about a little later, I actually was comparing it to my friends. I was like, no, what y'all don't understand, because they hated World of Warcraft immediately. I'm like, what y'all don't understand is that this is basically just 3D Diablo, like with a story.
It's 3D Diablo, but in Azeroth.
Yeah, I don't think any of us knew or cared what Azeroth was. Most of us still don't.
Rude.
So
somewhere Chris Metzen is crying.
And somewhere, namely right here, I literally do not care. So, you know, you have a little handful of classes which have expanded over every game that is released in the series to date, but you're going through dungeons which are randomly generated, which was itself a fairly big deal. You know, you typically would see random generation handled in things like rogue and various roguelikes. So it's very interesting to have this kind of a game with this kind of a story and a focus on graphics and art and stats and numbers.
Very spoopy atmosphere.
Oh yeah, no, it has a super spoopy atmosphere, but it was kind of rare to see randomized dungeons in this style of game. But what it meant was that, you know, because, you know, for a loot-based dungeon crawl, one of the main things you're going to be doing is grinding out new loot. So having randomly generated dungeons actually really helped to alleviate some of the stress of repetition. You would have, you know, entire dungeons that were laid out completely differently each time you went into them. And it ended up being a fairly major hit for Blizzard at the time. You know, we talked previously about how there's a pretty big gap between Warcraft 2 and Warcraft 3. That's largely because Diablo and the other big pillar IP, StarCraft, they were both so successful that Blizzard didn't need to go right back to that well. They were able to develop these other games, sell these other games, and not have sort of the crunch be on them to produce another Warcraft game right away. So definitely, definitely fantastic. Diablo was obviously an amazing game, but where it really became a worldwide brand was actually with the June 29th release, year 2000, of Diablo 2. And this is actually a game that ended up being like the modern Diablo game for 12 years. There was a 12-year gap between Diablo 2 and Diablo 3. And the reason for that is that Diablo 2 is an improvement to Diablo 1 on literally every level. We saw the start of Blizzard's Battle.net online service, which continues even to today.
Indeed.
As a means of matchmaking. It had online play. In fact, it was online focused. From a lot of people I know, Diablo 2 is actually the first online game that they played. And it really, you know, it really sort of established what these kinds of dungeon crawl loot grinds can be. It's built on all of the same gameplay concepts as the original Diablo, but it expanded the ideas in so many ways. It would let you, if jewels, you would get jewels that dropped that would let you add modifiers to your loot. You would be able to use a special cube in the game to combine things so that, you know, not only were you collecting loot, but you were also collecting loot to make other loot, which sounds silly now, but this was where that started. Before this game, that was not a very common mechanic. So it's definitely a pretty big deal. They expanded on the three basic archetypes for character classes that they had in the original Diablo.
Yeah, there was the Amazon, Necromancer, Barbarian, Sorceress,
well,
and
so
the Paladin.
The original Diablo had Warrior, Rogue, and Sorcerer, which are, you know, sort of the fantasy triad. But yeah, as you say, the Diablo 2 brought on the Amazon, the Necromancer, the Barbarian, the Sorceress, the Paladin, and via an expansion that came out a couple years later, the Druid and the Assassin, which were pretty fantastic as well. The game was, you know, whereas Diablo 1 is sort of like one dungeon that goes down 16 floors or something, you know, Diablo 2 brought a whole world of fiction, multiple dungeons that you're going through, all still randomly generated. You know, it was just an expansion of the ideas of Diablo 1 in every way, and this game was huge. It again would be impossible to overstate exactly what Blizzard did for online gaming with Diablo 2. And actually, that's something that we could say about most of Blizzard's online games. But I digress. Slaggy, do you have anything to say about Diablo 2?
Cow level?
Yeah. Diablo 2 had a cow level. It was a hidden act where you could basically go to a town full of cows, like bipedal cows. They all had spears and stuff, and you would go there. It had the best drops in the game, basically, and you would just go kill cows to get best loot after you had finished the core story. And that kind of humor has actually kind of been central at Blizzard. You know, in the earlier games, you would have all kinds of, like, little silly shout-outs to nerd culture. when in the Warcraft games, for example, when you would click on a unit, it would have all of its little voice, like it would have little voice clips of like, my life for hire, or yes, my lord. And then if you would like keep clicking them, you would sometimes get like, stop poking me. And just like a real comedic bent to these games that
right.
It was a little out of place, but welcomely so. So obviously that continued with things like Diablo 2's cow level.
Mm-hmm. And then the other kind of tidbit to go with Diablo is that Max Schaefer and Eric Schaefer, who were with Blizzard North and worked on Diablo and Diablo 2, went on to join Runic Games, which you probably know for Torchlight. Which for a lot of people, until Diablo 3 was a thing, Torchlight was, you know, basically the spiritual successor to Diablo.
Yep, that is absolutely a real thing.
And Torchlight's great, but this is not Torchlight buoy.
So after many, many years of hardcore fan demand, Diablo 3 was finally released on May 15th, 2012. Diablo 3 is a fantastic game. It's actually still a very, very popular game even today. It has versions on PlayStation 3. Xbox 360, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. I did not mention console ports of earlier Diablo games because they were complete garbage. Like, I'm sorry, there was like a Diablo 1 port for Game Boy and PlayStation 1. They're both pretty big messes.
Ew.
But Diablo 3 actually is designed differently from consoles and PC. You have like a quick dodge button on consoles due to, you know, you're not controlling with a keyboard and mouse, you're using a controller. So it turns it more into a little bit of an action game more than the PC release. It has one expansion so far. It was released on March 25th, 2014. That was called Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls.
Reaper of Souls.
So, Saiki, you've played a fair amount of Diablo 3. Why don't you talk a little bit about Diablo 3?
Yeah, I mean, I know the thing that's funny is that when Diablo 3 was in development, because at this point when, you know, Diablo 3 came out, I had been playing Blizzard games for years at that point. And there was a lot of controversy because, like, the original working progress concept art was like not gloomy looking enough, and people would go and add Photoshop filters to make it look like more washed out and dark and gloomy and spooky. But I mean, this game is a whole lot of fun. I've played it on PC and on Xbox One, and I actually think that the Xbox One, or, you know, just the console version, is the best way to play it. I think it's just really you know, and that's maybe a little bit controversial if you grew up playing Diablo and Diablo 2, but something about, like, not just being like click 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 click, like, something's real, like, really, it just really changes the flow of the gameplay to be able to move your character around and actually be, like, you know, using buttons to use your abilities. I mean, it really makes it more feel, you know, a lot more visceral in some ways.
And, you know, I obviously, you know, completely disagree. I think that Diablo 3 is best experienced on the PC. What I really get out of Diablo 3 on the console is same screen multiplayer. I find it sort of akin to playing Smash Brothers with your friends as opposed to playing Street Fighter with your friends. Like, you know, Smash Brothers is the one that you play at parties, and Street Fighter is one you play when you want to have, like, a serious fighting experience.
Okay.
For Diablo 3 on PC, that's what I play when I want to play, like, sort of the real Diablo 3. And the console version is what I play when I want to have friends over, hang out, talk, and have fun, and play, you know, basically Diablo 3 as an action game.
See, I really like Diablo 3 as an action game.
And that's not a problem. There's no problem there. It's cool to like things.
And it's just that really also opens up some interesting ideas for, you know, the future of Diablo, because since it's been so successful on the consoles, you know, just to hopefully see these two different versions continue simultaneously, or, you know, maybe even, who knows, a new IP, like, based on the more action-y, console-y version, whatever.
All right. Well, I have so much more I could say about Diablo 3, but in the interest of moving forward and, you know, coming in under deadline, I think we should probably advance this conversation. One of the other big pillars of Blizzard's IP is StarCraft. Now, StarCraft, you know, certainly y'all out there in Internet Radio Land are familiar with StarCraft. It's huge. Something interesting about it, you know, is that it's actually only had two main game releases.
Yeah.
The first, of course, was March 31st, 1998. This was a Microsoft Windows game. And surprisingly, it actually had a fantastic home port to the Nintendo 64.
Ah.
And, you know, Slaggy makes, like, weird jokey sounds, but it's actually a really competent port. It's quite fantastic. Using what was at the time fairly new, like, analog stick control, actually turned out to work really well for StarCraft. In any event, this is a return to the real-time strategy game genre, similar to, you know, the Warcraft games.
And kind of, honestly, why there's no more RTS for Warcraft, because Warcraft is just MMO now.
Yeah, because StarCraft is where the RTS is coming from. This is actually known as one of the best-selling PC games of all time, with more than 11 million copies sold worldwide. Wow. And that was in 2009, so you gotta figure since then it's must have moved many, many, many more.
Oh yeah, has a huge esports scene.
Indeed. It had one expansion pack. This was released in 1998. It is StarCraft Brood War. StarCraft takes all of the sort of concepts of Warcraft, puts them into a sci-fi setting, and adds a new faction. Technically speaking, all of the factions in StarCraft are new, but the three factions, Terrans are basically human, Protoss are basically orcs, and then you also have the Zerg, who are a race of insectoid aliens, and they sort of have really interesting gameplay mechanics that do not have an analog in Warcraft. You know, a lot of their playstyle is really focused on, like, generating a ton of low HP mobs and, like, rushing your opponent. Like, literally, that tactic is called Zerging. Because of StarCraft. So, you know, they added a whole layer of depth by having three factions over two. Mechanically otherwise, it's a very, very, very similar game, just with, you know, a sci-fi setting rather than fantasy. As a result, there's also more focus on, like, flying units and some stealth units, so it does have a flavor, even in its gameplay, all of its own. Slaggy, what do you have to say about StarCraft?
It's the franchise I spent the least amount of time with, but, you know, I definitely appreciate what it brought to the RTS genre. And, you know, I mean, I can tell why it remains popular, and, you know, StarCraft 2 is very well loved, and I mean there's a reason why there's not a StarCraft 3 yet. You know, these two games are just really polished, just not necessarily I'm not even gonna say it's not my thing, just something I haven't really ever sunk my teeth into and really spent a serious amount of time with.
Excellent, that's fair. So then I want to talk about StarCraft II: Wings of Liberty. Now, StarCraft II released July 27th, 2010. So, you know, again, we had a pretty big gap there between releases. It has had multiple expansion packs, which we've talked about here quite, you know, to quite some amount of detail here on the show. We have Heart of the Swarm, Legacy of the Void, and the most recent Nova Covert Ops. Now, Nova Covert Ops is interesting because it actually takes place using a character, Nova, who was actually going to have a spin-off first-person shooter game during the Xbox One, GameCube, and PlayStation 2 era.
You mean the Xbox? Just the Xbox.
Oh, shit. When I said Xbox One, I did not mean, like, the bone. Oh, man. Son of a gun.
Thanks,
so,
Microsoft.
Right? Nova Covert Ops is also interesting because it is, technically, they are treating it as an expansion, but it's really a multiple sets of, like, map packs. So it's almost like an episodic content for a real-time strategy game, which, again, you know, is very interesting. All of these expansions, basically, you know, they add new units, they do some unit balancing, they are completely different story scenarios, so, you know, it's sort of, in order to play, like, the full game, so to speak, you end up having to play all three. StarCraft's biggest legacy to date is probably the fact that it was at one point so large that in Korea, I believe it was Korea, there was actually an esports channel long before the rest of the world caught up on esports that largely just broadcast StarCraft games. So, you know, this was huge, huge, huge game online. Again, Blizzard was sort of at the forefront of online gaming, as we've sort of repeatedly said here. Saiki, do you have anything to say about StarCraft 2?
No, just that I did spend a little bit of time with that one, and, you know, just really, you know, a really polished game. Something I look forward to giving some time to, especially with all these content packs available now.
Excellent. And, you know, something I want to point out about StarCraft 2 is that there is a, like, entry-level free play version on Battle.net. I believe it's the core base game with none of the story missions, but you can play just, like, random map against computer or whatever.
Which is cool.
Which is actually really cool. It's a cool way to experience the gameplay. And if you want to play a real-time strategy game, you know, RTS, you know, balanced by the wizards at Blizzard because you've never done so, that's probably the easiest way for you to get your head in the door. So I would definitely recommend that.
Great advice.
I want to next talk about another game that you can play for free via Battle.net. I want to bring the focus over to Hearthstone. And I call out Hearthstone separately, even though it is sort of a Warcraft spinoff. You know, it's in the name, Hearthstone Heroes of Warcraft. But from a gameplay perspective, it is not related to the Warcraft series at all. It is a card game. It is based on all of the Warcraft games, including World of Warcraft, which we are saving for last here in this discussion. And it's a digital-only collectible card game. This is, you know, similar to what you might play on, like, a Pokemon the Card Game or Magic the Gathering, a Legend of Five Rings, Yu-Gi-Oh, Netrunner, etc. And basically what Blizzard did here was they created a digital only collectible card game. It is free to play. The only thing that you have to pay for is like bonus booster packs if you feel like you're not getting the cards you want in your free booster packs that come from time to time. And you know, it's an incredibly well-balanced game. You've almost certainly, if you're listening to the show, have some familiarity with Hearthstone. It's another one that's really big in esports right now. And it's just actually really incredible that Blizzard took this concept and right out of the gate completely nailed it from the design and balancing perspectives.
Just something that we didn't know that we wanted.
Right. Something else that's really cool that they added on was that when you get cards that you don't like, or, you know, you can only have two cards in your deck at any given time. So once you have more than two, you could, you know, it's like, oh, these are unwanted cards. You can actually convert them into materials to craft cards.
Yep, disenchanting.
Well, yeah, right. Based on the Warcraft disenchant mechanic. But it ends up really being a unique experience in the collectible card game world. I keep wondering when we're going to see like an official like physical release of real physical cards for the game, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. And it's funny because the reason I think that it should is because it's such a good card game. People at like board game conventions would play this game nonstop if there were a physical version.
Yeah, although they did have the World of Warcraft TCG, and I don't think they do that anymore, do they?
Not that I'm aware of. I played it for a brief window of time. It was fun, but it was basically just simulating playing WoW. And it's like, if I'm going to play WoW, I want it to be with my actual WoW character.
I only bought booster packs to try and get, you know, there would be TCG loot.
Ah, yeah. So there were, so that you know, everyone out there in internet radio land knows what Slaggy's talking about. There were random cards in the WoW trading card game that would have like scratch off codes for in-game World of Warcraft loot. So
usually they were like consumable items, but sometimes you could get a mount.
Yeah, so anyway, moving forward then, Slaggy, unless you have anything to say about Hearthstone.
No, just a lot of fun.
Excellent.
I need to play more of it.
We have the June 2nd, 2015 release of Heroes of the Storm. Heroes of the Storm is basically, you know, it's a MOBA similar to Dota. In case you're worried about all these acronyms, let me explain. They basically took the concept of Defense of the Ancients and built a crossover game, almost Smash Brothers style, in terms of being like cross all of the Blizzard IP universes and use those as the hero units in a Defense of the Ancient style game. And something that's really interesting is that though the earliest maps for Heroes of the Storm were very straightforward Dota, as time goes on and we get more and more advanced maps with more complex rules and quests and what have you, it starts to feel like a completely different game from the Dota games. And that's actually why, to me, you know, you can actually turn on ESPN3 and pretty often find Heroes of the Storm being played. I did that after going to a wedding last week, in fact. I ended up watching like 4 hours of Heroes of the Storm.
Was it Heroes of the Dorm?
It was, yeah. The college-themed competition, for those of you out there in internet radio land. So, you know, it's a really cool game. It's super well-balanced, which is why I think it's been so popular in the esports fields. And, you know, it's also really cool to be able to see your favorite characters from Lost Vikings, or Warcraft, or Diablo, or Starcraft, or Overwatch. I haven't seen Blackthorn in the game yet, but at this point I feel like it's just a matter of time.
Pretty much.
So it's you know, it's really cool to have all of these characters coming together in this style of game. It's super well designed, super well balanced, and you know, it's free to play. So if you're interested, just hop on in. We talked about Heroes of the Storm just a week or two ago, in fact, when we were talking about our favorite five player games. Because the game is a 5-on-5 game, and you can, if you want, you know, play against the computer. You can actually play single player with four computer AI teammates and 5 AI opponents. So it's a really fun game. It is online focused, but not online exclusive. And I think that's really cool. I'm a big fan. I've been playing it a lot recently. And, hopefully some of you out there in Internet Radio Land are interested in what you're hearing.
Indeed.
I next want to talk about a genre that Blizzard has no real experience in, yet it appears to be coming along very well. This is the game. It's actually in beta right this moment, which is a big part of why we're talking about Blizzard this week, in fact. This is Overwatch. Overwatch is due to release on May 24th, 2016 for Windows, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. The PlayStation 4, the PC version is presently in the middle of its largest beta weekend. This was originally announced as a free-to-play game, but it has since been announced to be a retail release with free add-on content over time moving forward from release. And this is, it's a first-person shooter. It sort of follows a lot of the cues of Team Fortress 2, but it also has a lot of similarities with other Blizzard games, specifically that, you're picking characters that have like these complete stories behind them. You look at a lot of these first-person shooter online games, and a lot of them have like just archetypes without any real story elements. That is not the case at all with Overwatch. These are all characters. They have little stories. They have little movies detailing their backstories. They all have very, very unique abilities. It's just a really different and interesting take on this kind of online first-person arena shooter. I find it very compelling. I think it's fantastic. I'm super happy I've been in several of these betas. And it's the kind
good
of game that
you.
I initially wasn't... What?
I said, good for you.
I actually initially wasn't that interested. First-person shooter's not really my genre, but I really feel like Blizzard nailed like the way the game controls, and that is the most important thing. So now for me, like my first-person shooter world is like Destiny and Overwatch.
I was just going to say, it's funny that you're like, I'm not much of a first-person shooter person, and I'm like, you've been talking all weekend about wanting to play Destiny.
Yeah, well, Destiny is fantastic, and as I've talked about here
Destiny
on the show...
Destiny is fantastic.
As I've talked about here on the show, it's one other case where they nail the controls so much that I'm not bothered by them, which I am in most first-person shooter
games. That sounds really
promising,
because I'm the same way.
Oh, yeah, you will almost certainly love Overwatch, Slaggy.
It's just a matter of which way do I play it, PC or console?
Well, you're probably going to want to go PC, because if you pre-order on PC, you actually get the character Tracer for free in Heroes of the Storm, which is cool. I don't know if you play Heroes of the Storm, but if you ever plan to, it might be worth getting.
Oh, I play a little Heroes.
All right, well then, see, it might be worth getting. All right, Overwatch is actually a game that we plan on talking about more moving forward, so we are going to move on for now, but don't worry, we're going to talk more about this game as the year goes on. It's not actually out yet, so as much as we've enjoyed playing it a little bit, we just don't have a whole lot to say about it yet.
How dare you?
All right, well then why don't you start our last conversation of the day, talk about World of Warcraft. That's a game we have played.
So World of Warcraft is a multiplayer, massively multiplayer online role-playing game set in the Warcraft universe. It originally released in November of 2004. In fact, November 23rd, 2004, the 10th anniversary of the Warcraft Orcs and Humans release. And it allows you to play as either the Alliance or the Horde. And we did an episode about World of Warcraft, so my inclination would be to direct you to that. But we'll just kind of really quickly go over the basics. There are 5 current expansions and 1 due out, as we mentioned, earlier this episode. So there was the original World of Warcraft, and then there was the Burning Crusade, which was released in 2007, Wrath of the Lich King in November 2008, Cataclysm, December 7th, 2010, Mists of Pandaria. Oh, you were wooing Cataclysm?
Yeah, because it was released on my birthday.
Oh, yeah, I was like, but it's not the best expansion, but... Mists of Pandaria, which was released on September 25th, 2012, and then the current expansion, Warlords of Draenor, released on November 13th, 2014, and we also, of course, are expecting Legion, the upcoming expansion. And, even with the subscription numbers having been, like, halved since its peak, it's still the most popular MMO out there. Even though there are other MMOs that maybe do some things better, like Final Fantasy XIV, Realm Reborn, there's something about World of Warcraft that's just, it's still a lot of fun to play. And, like, Blizzard, for all of the complaints that people have about them, Blizzard do a really good job, I think, about putting a polished product and, You know, so even if it is not the most innovative MMO on the market, you know, for the longest time, it really shaped what other MMOs were, like, should be like. And, you know, that's a trend we saw with their RTSs and with Diablo. You know, like, they basically defined what a good MMO should be. And, I mean, to the point where even, you know, you see even Final Fantasy XIV taking cues from World of Warcraft. So, like I said, if you're interested in a more in-depth discussion, I would probably direct you to our World of Warcraft episode. Anything that you would like to add, Captain Spike?
Well, actually, this is one game that, you know, we both have hundreds, as in, you know, multiple hundreds.
Of dollars?
Of hours.
Oh.
Invested. You know, I certainly have put more than 100 hours into every one of these IP pillars. I've probably also put hundreds, plural, into the Diablo games if you add them all up. So, you know, I'm really passionate about all of these games, but WoW holds a special place in my heart. You know, at one time, I can say that the majority of my IRL friends were playing WoW with me on a server. We were doing raids. We were experiencing content even when it was fresh. It was, you know, a really fantastic experience in my life. So I guess I'd just like to ask you, Sayu, about your feelings about World of Warcraft in the modern day, like now. Like, how do you feel about World of Warcraft now?
I feel like it's comfort food. It's always something that I can go back to, but that maybe it's not something that I want to eat every day. Like, you know, like when I was younger, I would eat it all the time, but now that I'm older and there's been other foods that I've tasted, it's something that I'll go back to once in a while, and it's familiar. It's like you can pick up right where you left off, even if there's like gameplay changes or your class has changed a little bit. It's familiar world, and I mean, it's always a good time, even if it's a short time that you spend back in the World of Warcraft.
Excellent, excellent. Well, then let me ask you this next question.
Am I going to resub
What?
Am I going to resub when I'm home from recording this? Because the answer is probably...
Really?
Well, you just resubbed, so...
Yeah, no, if you do, that's cool. I was actually just going to ask if you're planning to come back for Legion.
Oh, I'm definitely coming back for Legion. I want to make a Demon Hunter super bad.
You know, I didn't realize that Demon Hunters were going to start at level 98.
Yeah.
I'm kind of mad about it. I was looking forward to leveling from level 1 again. I haven't done that in so long.
Well, I guess we're going to have to start a Game Buoy Guild or something and start level 1s.
Well, so that's the next question. For any of those of you out there in Internet Radio Land, if you're interested in playing World of Warcraft with us, our mains are on the Blade's Edge Guild, or I'm sorry, the Blade's Edge server, and you should hit us up on Twitter or what have you. We'd be happy to play with you.
We're Alliance.
We are Alliance. I'm pretty dead set on Alliance. I'm not a big fan of Horde.
I like Undeads.
Even though aesthetically, I really dig Undeads, and I like the look of the areas of the Blood Elves. The leadership... Man, this is like the one thing about lore that gets me. It's like the leadership of the Horde is gross to me. Like, yeah. Thrall was cool, but everyone else, I just can't.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of Horde even feel that way.
Fair. Yeah, so I'm in WoW now. If, you know, you're trying to get into WoW, by all means, you know, hit me up. Roll on Blade's Edge, and, you know, we can do a thing.
Yeah, and you know, I say things like Final Fantasy XIV may be the superior MMO at this point, but then you have things with Final Fantasy XIV, like, you gotta grind through all that 2.0 content before you can even, like, move on to the expansion content. World of Warcraft does not have that sort of barrier to it, entry. You can roll up to level 20 for absolutely free. I mean, you are restricted with a couple of things, like you can't, you know, join a guild, or I think you can't trade, or things like that, but, you know, still the barrier for entry is very low. They've done a really fantastic job about how to, like, you know, learn your class too, like the way that they rolled that out by teaching you spells, you know, in sequence and stuff. So just really no better time to jump in.
Awesome. All right. Well, do we have anything else that we want to say about World of Warcraft?
If you're someone who is indecisive, you're going to end up with one of every class and beware. I mean, I have one of everything at least at level 70, so...
Sounds like you're living a cautionary tale.
Yes.
All right, well, let's move forward, because we do, in fact, have a rumor this week.
Oh, gasp.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
All right, our rumor this week comes to you via the Hollywood Reporter. We are specifically linking to Kotaku's piece on it, which is basically stating that the Pokemon Company has been meeting with various Hollywood studios to try and launch a big screen live action Pokemon film.
What?
Supposedly, Legendary Entertainment has been fighting Warner Brothers and Sony for the rights. I would be super interested to see where this is going. You're probably familiar with Legendary for their work on the Godzilla film recently. They are doing the Warcraft movie right now. They did Pacific Rim. So
yes.
They're definitely very accomplished. They can do this kinds of effects work and fantasy material. So I hope this comes to pass. I've seen a lot of people like, oh, God, no. But I feel like we're getting to a point where adaptations are getting mostly better. You know, certainly these projects aren't seen as like the fluff pieces that they used to be. People are trying to make good video game movies.
And like,
just look at Duncan Jones doing the Warcraft movie.
And excuse me, but let's not pretend like the Pokemon movies are like magical gems of anime film.
We were literally
watching like that. Was the ones that they were streaming the movies on Twitch, and there were like some god awful CG. It was like might have been one of the Jirachi films or something, or oh, it was the Manaphy film.
Ah,
and it was like
yeah,
it was Pokemon Rangers something something Manaphy, and it looked god awful. So I mean,
I'm so happy we're not watching that movie right now. I was not a fan. So all right, well, you know, we all only talk about rumors that we think have a fair chance of being real. They have sort of the air of truth about them. This one does. I fully expect negotiations to go forward from here, even if I'm not terribly optimistic about the film actually getting made because of just how these deals typically work. But
yeah, as long as it doesn't star Ash Ketchum, I'm down.
All right.
Anyway,
it's we're getting real close to the deadline here, so let's move on to what we've been playing.
I said, hey, what's going on?
This week, I have been playing Destiny, Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key, and Bravely Second. Let me talk a little bit about each of these games. Destiny, as you may or may not be aware, got a big content patch last week. Got a bunch of new gear,
like
new
gigabytes
loot,
big, right?
A new light cap, which is like the cap for like your leveling and gear. And it's overall really good. I've been playing a lot of it. Has a ton of quality of life changes made. And I remain super optimistic about Destiny as a game. It does have some issues as a service, just with regard to the fact that we only seem to be getting new content every 6 months. But, you know, when you compare and contrast that to even, like, World of Warcraft in the modern age, where it's going, like, a year at a time without anything new, it's still doing pretty well to me, and I still think, pound for pound, it has the best first-person shooter controllers in the world right now. So, still very pro-Destiny. Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key is a mobile game, but it's actually, like, a good game. I'm actually really surprised. I'm finding it very addictive. It does have a canon storyline that's going to lead into the events of Kingdom Hearts 3 and
Birth by Sleep, right? Isn't it kind of the origin story?
And Nomura-san says it will also have story beats that will be followed up on in future Kingdom Hearts installments.
Ooh.
So, you know, this is sort of where they're seeding the future of Kingdom Hearts, and I would definitely check it out if you're a fan of the series like I am. The gameplay won't make you want to die, and that's like high praise for a phone game.
Indeed.
Last, but definitely not least, I've been playing Bravely Second. You know, my opinion's super biased because I love Bravely Default. The first Bravely Default game is like one of my all-time favorite JRPGs. And so far, at least, Bravely Second is better in every way.
Woo.
While still building on Bravely Default. It's not a sequel in the Final Fantasy context. Like, Bravely Second follows all of the same characters, follows sort of the consequences and impact of the events of that first game. So
that's excellent.
It's definitely, to me, interesting to see in a JRPG coming out of Square Enix, but I'm a huge fan. I think it's really fantastic, and I'm really excited to see where the story goes.
That's awesome.
Sagi, what about you?
I've been putting more time into Pokemon X. Victory Road, probably the toughest Victory Road to date. I had forgotten that since it's been a while since I had played Y. And tried to challenge the Elite Four and found that some of my Pokemon were actually a little underleveled. So, you know, it's interesting because in a lot of the games after the original one, like the Elite 4 would be like low 50s levels, and like, you know, nope, these are all like in the 60s, just like I, you know, back in the original games. So a couple, I'm gonna have to do some grinding for the first time in who knows how long.
Oh wow. Well, luckily, I mean, you still have XP share, so it won't be that
bad. Oh yeah, yeah. I've been playing Miitomo. Does that count? I don't know. And I also have been playing a little bit, not as much as you, but I've played a little bit of Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key. I definitely see how it can be addictive. I just have been too focused on Miitomo because I'm trash. But I actually get a little bit of reminders, not in the gameplay. It's obviously not a puzzle game, but I like with the collecting the medals and stuff. That reminds me a little bit of Puzzle and Dragons and how you can combine the medals, and the medals help you do like more damage and stuff. Just makes me think of Puzzle and Dragons.
Excellent. Well, that's certainly a good thing. Puzzle and Dragons is very well loved, especially by people in this room.
Indeed. So,
with all that having been said,
I was just going to say, with that, I think
it's time for social links.
It is time for social links.
Slaggy, do you have those social links for us?
Yep, this week our social links question of the week was, Blizzard turned 25 back in February, but this week we celebrate their belated birthday. Which other games are you a fan of? And we also asked a bonus question in other Blizzard news. The Overwatch beta weekend is happening right now. Are you in? What do you think of it? We have Jason L., better known as Steve Wolf Jason, saying, favorite Blizzard game currently, Hearthstone. Games that I will hold dear, Warcraft 2 and Diablo 2. And
after all of our World of Warcraft adventures, you wouldn't say World of Warcraft, you jerk.
As far as the Overwatch beta says, I'm in, but I might not play. Last time it was pretty fun, reminding me of classic Team Fortress 2 with a little more flair. All right, thank you to Seawolf Jason. And Travis K, also known as Gamer Fox, saying, ah, Blizzard, currently playing Diablo 3. Back in the day, started with Diablo and Diablo 2, StarCraft and Brood Wars, Warcraft 2, Warcraft 3, and the Frozen Throne expansion, and World of Warcraft. Blizzard, to me, was PC gaming back in the day. And yeah, I mean, I definitely relate there. I didn't really care about PC gaming. I used to LOL at, you know, PC gaming master race and, you know, that sort of thing. But now I'm like, make sure that, oh, I need to make sure I have a decent graphic card in my computer and, you know, that I can keep playing at least the Blizzard games. That's kind of my benchmark to, like, is my computer in need of upgrade? Can it play Blizzard games still?
Well, and I was going to say, you know, luckily, you know, Blizzard games are typically super well optimized and their engines are typically very scalable. So you can have a pretty decent, you can see pretty decent performance even on like a relatively low spec'd system, which is something I give Blizzard huge shout outs for.
Yeah.
Any more social links?
Yeah, just catching up on a couple of tweets over on the Twitter. We had a tweet coming from Your Enzyme earlier this month, and I specified that it was earlier this month because it was for Zelda30Tribute.com, which, did we talk about that? About how they cease and desisted that?
No, I don't know that we did.
So, yeah, it was a really cute, like, 3D recreation of the original Legend of Zelda game. You know, very much work in progress, but it was really cute. And it's just a shame that, you know, Nintendo very heavy-handed with their cease and desist, similar to how we talked about Blizzard.
Indeed.
And Monarch Piratica, also known as Sulker, said, finally got around to listening to FalcoCast.org episode 4. Oh, GameBuoy.org boys, you rock my Amadeus.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, but if I did, I bet I would really appreciate your kind words.
Well, dear Commissar, I guess that's it for this episode.
I suppose so. If there's a callback here, I'm not going for it. So why don't you start those solicitations?
Well, we love your feedback. We really, really do. We like your Facebook likes. We love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
Thank you. I was waiting for you to say that. We appreciate your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. I guess Google Play Podcast is a thing now. Should we be on there? Is that a platform that you use? Please, you know, give us feedback if that is something that you want to see us on. And you can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And I think
you know, while we're on that tip, if there's ever anything, any topic that you think that we should be covering but haven't, reach out to us and let us know. We're always happy to think about these things. And, you know, if we have an angle that's worth talking about, we would love to do so.
You should have said something that should be on our radar. That's not on our radar, but most definitely should be.
That seemed too obvious.
Okay, well, things that should be on your radar are some great podcasts, such as...
As ever and always, my first shout out goes to Vogue Network. VogNetwork.com sort of generally. You can hear us now on Vogue Network on Tuesdays at 3 p.m.
3 p.m. Pacific time.
All right, I once referred to it as morning, and Slaggy chewed my darn head off, so...
Well, actually, I realized we got a tweet from Little Daddy's Pizza saying, why do we keep fucking this up? It wasn't you, boo.
Yeah, it was probably us, honestly.
It was probably us.
Yeah, probably. Either way, you can check out such amazing shows on Vogue.
Sorry,
Network.
We got a last-minute tweet from your enzyme. Can I read it?
Yeah, you've already stopped me, bro.
How did I miss this? Hope it isn't too late. Favorite Blizz game is WoW, because it was the game that ruined my life, LOL. Literally hearting it right now as we speak. And you should play with us.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, back to it, though. On VogNetwork.com, you can check out such shows as Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. Ranger Pridecast, featuring myself and Shane Alenko, talking about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Japanese Super Sentai series, upon which it's based. The Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, and these really cool non-Vogue shows. Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin.
I want a tin of cookies now.
X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. And Reading is Fundamental, Slag Kicks show featuring myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness, talking about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Slaggy, why don't you take us to a bunch of places?
I'm going to tell you about the Hunty Bunch. The Hunty Bunch is what I like to refer to as some of our favorite podcasts that may or may not be LGBT themed, including VG Realness, which is serving up a weekly dose of video game chit chat among friends. You should also check out their YouTube. I also, of course, would like to shout out to Game Bar, the gay video game prairie home companion and a valuable part of our Hunty Bunch, along with La Palanca Podcast, Podcast Pori para Gay Gamers Latino Americanos en Español, the Joystick Jockeys, who are two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them, and our LGBTQ cuties. And certainly I'd like to shout out to Nintendo Fun Club.
Oh, we have another tweet here from Your Enzyme. I haven't played at Play Overwatch, but I can't wait to hear if it's worth playing or not.
Yay!
I would definitely say that it is worth playing. I'm a big fan. Obviously, if you've listened this far into this episode, you already know that. And hopefully I'll see you there, since you're one of my Destiny bros.
Yay!
Hopefully I'll see you there. Okay, continue your shout-outs.
Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I would also, of course, like to just give a special shout-out to the DSZ podcast, which features Game Buoy superfans Dan and Crystal. Join them as they level up their game development skills and discuss the daily grind along the way on a non-daily schedule. And last but certainly not least, I'd like to shout-out to Anime Buoy, which is your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. You might notice that we took a week off. This is because we were at a friend's Star Wars themed wedding, which was a blast, but also, you know, did involve a lot of our IRL time. So please look forward to Anime Buoy returning very, very soon to the airwaves. And of course, I would be remiss to not mention Zelda Reorchestrated, who did the late great plays that did our theme music, Forever Pouring Out a 40 in the Great Fairy Fountain.
All right. Well, with all that having been said, I want to thank you all so much out there in Internet Radio Land for spending this lovely but warm Sunday afternoon with us. I hope that you have enjoyed listening at least half as much as we have enjoyed talking to you guys. It remains a real, true, sincere pleasure to interact with you guys every week, and it's something I always look very much forward to. We'll be back at you pretty soon with more fun stuff, but until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and work complete.
Time is money, friend! We'll be right back. And we have the latest announced. We have the latest issue of Famitsu has announced that in the latest issue of Famitsu, Capcom announced fucking goddamn shit.
It does have Patchy
Slot. Yeah, so